I was back on the monitor's satellite, but the monitor's superpowered recruits were gone. The Speed Force, or whoever was keeping me around, was still playing its games with me. I saw Lila in her Harbinger guise. Was somebody controlling her again? Standing next to her were Alexander and Pariah. She smiled at them warmly. She might have been dressed as Harbinger, possessed all Harbinger's power, but she was still Lila. She was reading from a thick leather-bound book.
My father made me swear, saying, "Behold, I am dying. In my grave which I dug for myself in the land of Canaan, there you shall bury me."
I recognized the words from Sunday morning church services as a child. They came from Genesis, though I didn't remember which verse. Harbinger wiped away her tears and put the Bible down, unable to continue. Summoning what strength she had, she looked into the airlock, only to quickly pull away. I moved past them to see what was inside. I saw a golden metal tube inside and realized it was the monitor's coffin. They were burying him in the infinite limbo he had created from his own energies. Alexander held on to her, probably as much for her comfort as his.
His essence is all around us and gives us life. This is merely his body. Let it now rest in eternal peace.
Pariah said nothing as he solemnly pressed the small black button that launched the tiny capsule into the whiteness. Harbinger watched the golden tube streak past the satellite on its long, endless journey.
From the moment he was born, he knew the moment he would die. He rescued me even though he knew I would be the one to take his life.
Her eyes followed the coffin until it finally faded from view. When she turned back to the others, she was smiling.
Funny what you remember now. When I was a child, I think no more than 8, you brought me back to Earth. It was cold, and I didn't have the right clothes for the weather, and I'm sure I shivered terribly. But all that I remember is that it's the only time we ever left this ship. The only time I ever saw a real sky above my head, or breathed air I hadn't breathed before. It was winter, and we were standing on a beach. He was pointing beyond the horizon to where he rescued me years before. His other arm was around me to keep me warm. I loved the feeling that he would always protect me. Even then, I knew something was different. He had always been so formal, but under the bright, full sun, he seemed almost loving. I think it was the only time he spoke to me the way I always imagined a father talked to his daughter. He told me about the first time he had seen the Earth. Still young and primitive. I didn't realize then how many millions of years ago that must have been. But he told me stories about impossible animals and savage beasts, and I gleefully took in every word. But then his manner changed. "Harbinger," he called me, "not Lila. We are here for one paramount reason. We are here to do what must be done." I didn't understand what he was talking about then, but now I realize he was preparing me for this day. Everything he ever did was to prepare me for this day. It's funny. I don't know why I don't feel that he was using me, but I don't. Maybe it's because I know that even as he suffered, he tried so hard to make sure I wouldn't. The monitor was born knowing his reason for being was to save all existence. Everything he ever did was so he could fulfill that destiny.
Harbinger turned to Pariah. He was still staring into the void.
We can show our love to him by making certain that destiny is achieved. It's our job now to save the universe.
She settled into the monitor's chair and checked the different view screens ringing the telecommunications room. Each one was focused on a different time and place. The picture shifted quickly from hero to hero, villain to villain, world to world, from one era to the next. I was watching scenes from places I couldn't identify, people I'd never seen before, and unbelievable moments of history from my planet and others. Harbinger hit a button on the keyboard to her side, and suddenly, The names of the people and places I was watching scrolled across the bottom of the screens, in English, her native tongue. At least I'd now know what and who I was looking at. 100 different scenes flashed every nanosecond. It was difficult even for me to follow them all. The Earths, both of them, had changed. Their universes were slowly merging, and where they intersected, it was not only a geological overlapping, but a temporal one too. Earths 1 and 2, because their vibrational frequencies were the closest, had the most connectives. But I saw that sections of other worlds in both their universes also overlapped. Time was now as fluid and interchangeable as space. This is what I saw. I was looking at a fragment of 15th century Venice's Grand Canal. Balanced on a Venetian gondola, Batman and Robin fought the Turkish army through what had once been the Batcave beneath Bruce Wayne's ancestral home. The Turks, soon to invade Cyprus, were assisted by the army of Qanjar Roe, a power-mad dictator from the planet Dor. On the screen directly above me, I saw Superman 1 in Mexico City, leading an army of villains including Sinestro, Solomon Grundy, Eclipso, Black Adam, and Chemo between the twin pyramids of the Sun and the Moon. Nearly 24 dinosaurs, disoriented by their journey, angrily swarmed the Street of the Dead. On Ran, third planet from the star sun Alpha Centauri, Adam Strange, his wife Alana, and Jay Garrick, Flash 2, my mentor and inspiration, raced alongside 7 armored knights, not from the past as one would expect, but from Earth's future. The knights astride 8-foot mutated Dalmatians followed them into Ranagar, Ran's capital city. The limits of the view screen didn't let me see what they were running toward. Events such as these were happening throughout both universes. Fragments of time and space intermingled and created jumbles of previously accepted realities. Not all the screens showed moments of violence. Some nearly broke my heart. Robot Man saw Larry Traynor and Rita Farr, his teammates from the Doom Patrol, picnicking along with their chief, Niles Calder. He joined them, laughing as they talked about their next mission and the Maui vacation they planned to take later that year. Although he couldn't say anything to his friends, I knew Robot Man had not seen them for nearly 7 years. The others had died during the mission just after the one they were planning. They had sacrificed their lives then, so a handful of strangers could live. Hiding his feelings, Robot Man raised a glass to toast his friends, savoring the little time together they would have. I looked to find Iris somewhere on one of those screens, though I knew she would not be shown to me. I saw figures from the past huddled with awestruck historians. I saw children reunited with long-dead parents. How many questions would be answered now? How many broken hearts mended?
Alexander Luther of Earth 3. Alex worked alone, typing at the keyboard in the cramped laboratory the monitor raised him in. He entered the data, knowing that he'd been lying to Harbinger. He wasn't happy about it, but the monitor's orders were specific. Lila would do anything to stop Alex if she learned his plan. At any rate, Plan B would only be used if all else failed. He felt a breeze behind him, even though that was impossible here in the sealed environment of the satellite. He looked around, but nobody was there.
Guilt. That's what it is. This is what I get for going behind Lila's back.
Several dozen faces scrolled up the computer screen. He only required a few of them, but he needed to choose carefully. Alex made his choices, so much for what Harbinger thought he was working on. Then he returned to the virtual model he'd been constructing. His containment suit, preventing the positive matter side of him from touching his antimatter half, was functioning perfectly, as expected. The monitor had done his job right. The monitor needed Alex because in all of history, only his body had ever safely contained that impossible mix of those opposing forces. If the monitor's machines failed, Alex would focus his combined power to open a tunnel between the final three universes. He would then draw them into him the way the monitor had with Earth 1 and Earth 2. Alex knew he would die, but the 5 remaining universes would at least temporarily be safe. Harbinger, Pariah, and their ghostly visitor, although the monitor assured him he was there, Alex had yet to see him, would then have enough time to stop the anti-monitor and save the multiverse. There were so many possibilities for failure, But if 5 universes could be saved, then his life, however short it may have been, would be worth sacrificing. Besides, although he looked to be 25 now, he had been born only 2 weeks ago. He hadn't had time yet to become all that attached to life. Harbinger, watching the rows of view screens, looked around and wondered why Alex hadn't yet returned. It shouldn't be that difficult to check the monitor's digital nodes and select the heroes needed to save the final 3 Earths. She manipulated the controls in front of her and located him. He was in the old laboratory, the one in which the monitor had raised him. Why was he there and not on the bridge? Harbinger closed her eyes and concentrated. A second form rose from her, not corporeal as the original. She had learned her lesson. This time her replicate would remain intangible. If she couldn't be touched, she couldn't be taken over. Her doppelganger lowered itself through the satellite floor and made its way invisibly to the old lab. She entered the room, breezing past Alex. He turned to her. Did he sense her presence? But his eyes swept past where she stood, then returned to his work. The doppelganger looked over Alex's shoulder and saw what he was working on. Worse, she understood what he was planning. Her other self had to be told. She turned and floated upward. She passed through the ceiling and returned to her original body.
On the view screens, I saw that the Earths were now one-third merged. Once their solid masses completely joined, their combined existences would shatter both worlds. I knew that same scenario would be duplicated with every world that had an other-dimensional double. The chain reaction of two universes merging would cause the immediate destruction of both. Harbinger shuddered. I thought I saw her body shimmer. Then, looking even grimmer than before, she turned away from the view screens. She paced the room, then angrily slammed her fist into a wall.
Damn you, Alex!
What had happened? She sat at a keyboard.
You don't know what you're doing. This isn't your decision to make.
She did something on the controls, and the view screen images changed from panoramic snapshots to close-ups of the monitor's warriors. Alexander Luther re-entered the room.
Do you have the list?
Yes.
Give it to me.
I began to wonder if she'd been possessed again. A dozen or so heroes and villains. From now on, I think I should call them all heroes. Anyone putting their lives on the line to save the universe deserved that. Suddenly appeared in the room. Why did she bring only a handful on board? What was she planning for the others? Harbinger turned back to the view screens as the heroes waited to hear what they were supposed to do next.
The antimatter cloud is moving towards the final 3 universes. The crux points of the attacks are, as they were before, the now finite Earths. Before we can save your worlds, we need to save theirs.
Wait, I don't like this. I'm not a scientist, but I think this is wrong. Our worlds are still in danger. What I saw on Earth was horrible. We should help our own planets first.
Starfire stood over 6'1" and had wide green eyes and flawless golden skin. To say she was gorgeous would be a terrible understatement. Her real name was Coriander, and somehow she exuded both a raw sexuality and a sweet innocence at the same time. Starfire was a member of an alien race of warriors. I'd seen her in action, and wasn't sure that even Wonder Woman could take her in a fair fight. Nightwing, the leader of the Titans, was on one of the view screens, and I noticed her face brighten when she spotted him. Wally told me she'd been in love with him from the day she first fell to Earth, but the idiot, Wally called him that, not me, rarely responded in kind. Starfire's eyes never left Nightwing.
I'm not leaving Earth to go elsewhere. We're needed here.
Before he moved out on his own and changed both his uniform and hero name, Nightwing had been Robin, the Batman's first kid partner.
Why are you arguing with me? I know what I'm...
I saw her eyes imperceptibly dart to Alex, then turn back to Starfire.
We need the energies of all 5 universes. Without it, we won't have the power to resist.
Starfire was about to reply. When she stumbled back, out of control, her hand grabbed the wall for support. A second later, Harbinger was on the floor. Alexander Luther was struggling back to his feet. I hadn't felt the vibrations pulsing through the monitor's satellite or the sudden jolt that had sent everyone sprawling, but I certainly saw Pariah react.
The evil has found us. Is another universe about to be destroyed?
His eyes unfocused, as if he was looking at sights and horrors that were not in front of him.
We must leave this place now!
I saw the walls begin to wobble and break apart. Harbinger was thrown again, unable to stop herself from sliding across the room. The steel walls peeled away in front of me, exposing the limbo whiteness beyond. A dark blue flame surrounded us.
The anti-monitor. He's found us. He's attacking.
Alexander grabbed Harbinger.
We've got to go now.
Not yet.
Harbinger pulled free and lunged for the keyboard, which had fallen to the floor.
I can't. Not now.
Pariah fell, and Alex reached to take his hand. The vibrations jostled them again, pushing them apart. Pariah stretched, their fingers finally meeting. They grabbed onto each other like the jaws of a trap. Alex pulled Pariah closer, then grabbed his wrist. All Alex had to do now was brace himself and pull. The satellite was hit again with another powerful blast. Walls disintegrated, the floor began to evaporate. Alex wedged his feet under one of the fallen computer terminals and pulled hard. Pariah's weight resisted him, but Alex would not give up. As soon as he could, he grabbed Pariah's wrist with both hands and pulled again. Suddenly, all the weight anchoring him disappeared. Alex fell back, tumbling to the floor. He looked around, trying to figure out what had happened. The answer, unfortunately, was too simple. Pariah had disappeared. Another universe was about to die. As the satellite crumbled around us, Alexander Luther struggled across the room. Another blast shook the satellite. Alex forced himself into the computer chair bolted to the workstation, now lying angled on its side.
I have no choice.
He entered data faster than any eye but mine could follow. Harbinger saw what Alex was doing.
Alex, no! Don't!
She flew across the room as the satellite shook again.
Alex, I already have the monitor's death on my conscience. I killed the man I love. I'm not going to let you die too.
Alex wrestled with her, trying to break free of her tight grip.
Lila, for God's sake, leave me alone. I'm the only chance we have. I just have one last computation.
And it will be entered, Alex, but not by you.
She yanked him from the chair and skittered him across the room like a small stone over a lake.
I'm sorry. Your destiny lies elsewhere.
Harbinger began to sparkle, as if every atom in her body had ignited. All of this happened in seconds.
What the hell's going on?
Harbinger turned to the heroes and smiled at them.
Go to the final three Earths. You will know what you have to do.
They all disappeared.
Lila!
She raised her hand, transparent and glowing, and no longer solid.
Alex, if I survive, if any of us do, I'll explain it all to you.
She lowered her hand. And then Luther was gone too. I looked behind me and saw the satellite walls and floors were almost completely dissolved. Cold blue flames danced across the decaying metal that remained, consuming it as if it were some Thanksgiving feast. I turned back to see Harbinger disappearing into a cone of swirling red energy, not dissolving as the walls had, but becoming in a sense part of it. She was changing form from matter to energy. Harbinger disappeared, but I could hear her voice somewhere in the back of my head.
Your love is alive, Barry Allen. She awaits you at the end of time.
Iris? Iris is alive? How do I find her? How do I get to her? Harbinger, please answer me! But the red light was gone. I found myself alone in that stark white limbo, staring at the monitor's satellite, the blue flame consuming its final remains. The monitor's satellite was now gone, and for the first time, I actually panicked. I tried, but I couldn't get back to the Speed Force, and I certainly didn't intend to stay here in this vast, empty nothingness. I floated through the white for I don't know how long. I wasn't sure how time was measured here, or even if it was. And if there was no time here, did that mean I would live forever? I thought of my parents. Would I be joining them soon? It had been so long since I saw them both, and I missed them terribly.
I thought about the lightning and the chemical bath that had turned me into the Flash. I thought about Wally and how the lightning had literally and impossibly struck twice. I thought about my life as the Flash. Man, I could run around the world in less than a second. Coolest power ever. I thought about my friends. And of course, that led me right back to the beginning. It was all a joke, wasn't it? All this time, I'd been wondering if Iris was alive, and now that I knew the answer, I could do nothing about it. So what did a cosmic rimshot sound like? Maybe I wasn't as smart as I thought, but even lost and alone with nowhere to go, I didn't plan on giving up. A long time ago, the Mirror Master turned me into a pane of glass, and I somehow got myself out of that. I had even been turned into a second-rate Pinocchio once, a wooden puppet Flash, but that hadn't slowed me down much either. I wiggled myself through the white to where the satellite had been. I thought everything was gone, but I saw small, dark spots here and there, with even tinier sparks of blue. I reached for them, but they disintegrated in my hand. I moved on and saw an almost invisible red light string disappearing into a wispy pinprick hole, the last ember of wherever Harbinger had gone. I reached for the string, then pulled back. I couldn't touch it and risked destroying it too.
Well, you're supposed to be a scientist, so think your way through this.
I stood or floated there for another who knows how long, until a smile forced its way to my lips.
Of course. You're the fastest man alive, aren't you?
I can speed up my atoms. I can move through anything without touching it. I needed to concentrate. There was no surface for me to play against, but I didn't intend to run. I had to speed up my internal vibrations until my atoms moved so fast they wouldn't damage that fragile red light string. It's how I move through buildings. I could do it. I could feel my insides churning. This was how I ran through solid matter. Nothing was going to stop me. Harbinger went from solid matter to energy, but to get through that hole, I didn't need to go all the way. I was running without moving. I was winning the Daytona 500, no problem. I was NASCAR squared, no Kugeled. Although seeing Iris would be a spectacular award, I wasn't doing this for her. This was for me. My legs weren't moving, but I was running faster. I reached for the red string, its last section disappearing into the hole. We touched, and our atoms merged. For just an instant, we were one. I fell through the string and was carried along with it. This was Harbinger, or at least part of her energy trail. I fell, tumbling down the hole, Alice's white rabbit with lightning bolts on his red mask. I didn't know where I would wind up, but I was pretty certain it wouldn't be Wonderland. I continued down the string until I saw flashes of a bright red light coming from somewhere ahead of me. In the immortal words of Buckaroo Banzai, wherever you go, there you are.
Psychopirate of Earth 1.
So, are they dead?
The psychopirate trembled as he asked his question, although he immediately wished he hadn't.
Idiot, dope! Why call attention to yourself?
But he couldn't help himself.
I mean, I saw the satellite explode or whatever, but I didn't see you blast them or anything.
I do not require external weapons.
Right. So I guess they all bought it. Good. One more for our side, huh?
This delays my enemies. It does not stop them. But now, you are needed.
The pirate's skin turned cold and wet. He tried to maintain control.
Good. Great. I've been waiting. Hey, that was perfect. I really sounded in control.
It won't work, mister.
Startled out of his reverie, the pirate turned to see the Flash struggling against his energy chains. The harder he resisted, the tighter they held him.
What are you going to do about it, Flasher? Run away? Come on. You know you're not going anywhere.
I don't have to. This crazy scheme's over, and Big Shot here knows it.
The anti-monitor turned to the Flash as the pirate backed to a wall.
What are you doing, Flash? Why did you have to say anything? You don't want to make him mad.
The anti-monitor hovered over the Flash. His cold eyes glowed a fiery yellow. The Flash spasmed as his arteries suddenly compressed, blocking the flow of blood to his brain.
The monitor is dead. His satellite has been destroyed. Only 5 universes out of the millions that originally existed remain. and I will now destroy his vital soldiers.
The pirate saw the Flash's face turn white. His irises had already disappeared behind his lids, and blood poured from his nostrils and mouth.
No, don't die. Don't leave me alone with him. We need him, sire. Don't you remember? You said he's the only one who can open the way to the final dimensions.
Pirate looked at Flash, hanging limp from the energy chains.
You can't die, you stupid idiot. Not now. I'm trying to save you.
The anti-monitor turned from the Flash. His eyes no longer burned with rage. The pirate watched as color slowly made its way back into the Flash's face.
You won't regret this, sire. You won't.
Pirate, I promised you power and possessions. I will now grant you that wish.
The anti-monitor focused a bright blue light into the pirate's eyes. Cold energy burned through him.
My foe's champions have been sent to protect the final three Earths. You will make certain they fail.
He's gone. I'm alone. Thank God.
The pirate lay still for several minutes, huddling fetal-like to warm himself up. He finally forced himself to his feet and turned to the Flash, whose eyes were slowly opening again.
I saved you, you know.
You're still not going to succeed. They'll stop you.
Maybe. But I doubt it. He's powerful. Stronger than Superman and Supergirl put together.
You can resist him.
And die like you're going to once he's done with you? Oh no, Flash. He's going to let me live.
Live where, pirate? Come on. You know the truth. There's not going to be any worlds left to live on.
No. No, Flash. No, you're trying to confuse me, but it won't work.
Pirate, for God's sake, just for once, think for yourself.
I am! That's all I do anymore, think. And you know something? Thinking stinks. It hurts. Doing what I'm supposed to do, controlling emotions, that's the only thing that doesn't hurt.
He turned from the Flash and looked instead at the view screens mounted just above his head. There they were, his assignments. Earth X, Earth S, and Earth 4.
You see them? Three Earths, Flash. With lots of little heroes on them. He saved me because I can control their emotions. I can make them think anything I want. I don't want to think, so I'll let them do it for me. It's gonna be fun, Flash. Whoopee.
The Flash struggled again with the energy bonds still holding him. They tightened around his arms and legs, pulling him forcefully into the stasis chamber. How long had he been a prisoner here? Did anyone else know he was still alive? He tried to speed up his atoms again, but as his vibrational rate increased, the beams tightened. He let himself relax, and the bonds loosened enough for him to easily breathe.
I can do it. I'll escape. I just have to figure out how.
I found myself in the middle of a battlefield. The sky was red. The white wall of antimatter was already pushing its way across the globe, but it wasn't here yet. This universe was being prepared for annihilation. The buildings surrounding me showed the effects of multiple bombings. Some were hollowed husks, long abandoned. Gunshots and mortar blasts pockmarked their surfaces, while others were still in flames, decimated in obviously recent attacks. The soldiers fired at an enemy hidden across the mall near the Lincoln Memorial. American soldiers, at least I assume they were from the stylized ego patches on their light brown uniforms, hunkered behind a fallen mail truck. Its license plate read, Washington, D.C. The White House was behind me and looked much the same as the one I was used to visiting on my Earth. But as my eyes followed the long pole above the portico, I finally realized which Earth I was on. I was staring not at the American flag, but a bright red banner waving in the breeze, in its center a white circle, and embroidered in that was a thick black swastika.
The JLA had files on this universe. I was on what was called Earth X. After almost 50 years, World War II was still being fought here. This was America, but the Nazis were in control. I ran across the mall to find a half dozen Americans, poorly armed, struggling to keep their positions. One of them was dead, and a second was bandaging the leg of a third. The sergeant, the name Rock was sewn on his front pocket flap, was on a radio calling for help.
They got us pinned! Ice cream soldiers down, and Johnson's been hit! I'm telling you, man, it ain't easy down here. We need backup, fast!
I looked back across the mall and saw a steady series of flashes. The Americans were outnumbered and outgunned.
Son, are you Sergeant Rock?
I turned to see what could only be Uncle Sam standing in front of the memorial, five other costume figures positioned behind him. Uncle Sam, at least the one from my Earth, wasn't real, but an illustration popularized by Thomas Nast in the 19th century and made famous in a World War I recruiting poster by James Montgomery Flagg. But according to our JLA files, on this Earth, he was very much real. Short-cropped white goatee, dressed in his traditional red, white, and blue, the stars and striped top hat included. I'd been able to read the adventures of Jay Garrick's Flash because a writer's dreams let him accidentally peek into Earth 2. I wondered if Nast or Flagg's dreams had penetrated into this universe. I tried to remember what I read long ago in the JLA files. One of the men was costumed in yellow and fired beams of light. I was pretty sure he was called the Ray. I certainly remembered Phantom Lady. She also wore a yellow costume, what little there was of it. If memory served, she was a hand-to-hand combat specialist. The Black Condor's costume, blue with a long cape that attached to his wristbands, allowed him to fly, while the human bomb wore a silver-gray head-to-toe containment suit that controlled his nuclear energy that could, on his command, create explosions. Sergeant Rock recognized them and greeted them with a salute.
Freedom fighters! You're a sight for sore eyes. Rats has gotten to the White House. Our job's to clear him out.
With a thoughtful smile, Uncle Sam looked across the mall to the White House. He placed a comforting hand on Rock's shoulder.
Been fighting this war now for 50 years, I reckon. Maybe it's time it came to an end.
Sam suddenly slipped his arm around Rock's neck, yanking him back as his other arm snaked around his chest and prevented him from moving.
I'll hold him for you, Bomb.
The human bomb removed one of his containment gloves. His hands glowed with fiery energy as he reached for Rock's face.
Yeah! Time the resistance died!
A beam of white light slammed into the human bomb, shaking him, but he stood his ground. The bomb and I turned to see Dr. Light standing atop the rubble of what had been the National Air and Space Museum.
Stand down!
The bomb wasn't listening. He turned back to grab Rock.
Now where was I?
A second beam struck the bomb. This one was gold and crackled with the power of the sun.
What the hell?
He thought it was Dr. Light again, but she was still powering up.
Up here, mister!
I saw Starfire flying over him, swooping in low. She unleashed another star bolt. This one hit him in the face, nearly tearing off his head.
Get away from that soldier!
I wondered how she got here, but then I remembered she was one of the Monitor's warriors. Thank God. I prayed that meant they were all still alive. The human bomb stumbled back, still smoking from the blast. I didn't know what made him act the way he did, but I knew the bomb and the other freedom fighters were Earth-X heroes. If they were somehow being controlled, we needed to stop them, not kill them. Of course. For someone so fast, I was really slow on the uptake. The Psycho Pirate was controlling them. Hawkman 2 and someone else, a bird-like man named Northwind. I had no idea which Earth he was from. Streaked overhead, gliding on his gold-brown wings. He aimed a weapon at the Ray. A thin beam of light focused on the Ray. He easily dodged it, then circled back, firing his own rays at Northwind. The Birdman had tried to climb, but the first blast hit his wings, clipping them at their edge. He staggered back, struggling to regain balance. He was almost upright again when a second burst of light hit him. And he plummeted to the ground. Hawkman dived instantly, rocketing groundward in pursuit. He flew under Northwind, then arced up and caught him. He gently lowered the Birdman to the ground.
The ray flew low and carefully targeted Hawkman. I could tell he was hearing voices, because I suddenly heard them too.
This one has heartlessly killed millions of innocent people. Feel the anger. Let it grow. Let it consume you. Destroy the bloodthirsty murderer. Destroy your enemy.
The anti-monitor had strengthened the pirate's emotion-controlling powers, and now he was using them on the freedom fighters. The ray was powering up, ready to fire another lethal blast into Hawkman. I saw him stare at his hands, tingling with energy as they always did, just before he unleashed his force. A starbolt burned into him. He saw Starfire hovering just above him before he collapsed to the ground, unconscious. Dr. Light had powered up again. She fired two quick light bolts, blasting Phantom Lady back into the debris, rendering her unconscious. We were all concentrating on the battle and didn't notice the massive figure suddenly loom over us. It was Harbinger. She was no longer a being of flesh and blood, but composed of pure energy. She was at least 100 feet tall. Her head was bowed low, her eyes squeezed shut in concentration. She wasn't solid, nor an invisible ghost like me. She could be seen if anyone had the wherewithal or even time to look up. Her lips were moving as if she were speaking. I saw Uncle Sam scramble for the weapon that Northwind had dropped. Preferring fists and muscle, he wasn't used to firearms, but I could hear the pirate's inner voice urging him on.
You see the girl, Starfire, don't you? The golden alien makes you feel sad, doesn't she? You know why? She wants to kill America's hopes and dreams, the way she's killed America's boys.
That makes her a killer.
How right you are, Sammy. So now, instead of being sad, you have deep cravings for revenge.
Revenge.
Uncle Sam aimed the gun at Starfire. His fingers closed on the trigger.
What are you waiting for? We're here for some good old American flag, apple pie, and ice cream revenge. And who was angry enough to kill her, Sammy?
I am. I am angry enough to kill her.
Hallelujah, Sammy. Let her rip.
Sam, no!
Of course he couldn't hear me. What good was it seeing these terrible moments but being unable to affect them? I was ready to lose it.
Sam, don't do it! You can't kill her!
I saw his eyes blink, and he looked around as if he were suddenly snapping out of a spell.
Who said that? Who's calling me?
He heard me.
Sam, you're angry, remember? Don't waste time. Kill the alien who wants to destroy everything good there is about America!
Sam looked at the gun in his hand.
Don't do it.
I tried to touch him when I heard a different voice, this one calling to me.
Run through them.
It was Harbinger's voice. I saw her in the sky. She was staring at me.
Run through them? What do you mean?
I stared at her, still not understanding. But I ran to each member of the Freedom Force, and then, because I was still intangible, I ran through them. But I stopped after I ran through Sam. If there was a chance, any chance I could stop him, I had to try. I concentrated on getting angry. I let my rage build. I felt something happening inside me. My body tingled. I felt ground beneath my feet. I was becoming solid again. Yes! I reached to grab Sam's gun, to pull it away from him, and destroy it before he could kill Starfire. But before I could, I disappeared.
Inside the Anti-Monitor's castle, the Psycho Pirate stared at the viewscreen.
Screw me! Uncle Sam's wavering!
He nearly swallowed the microphone.
Anger, Sammy! You're feeling dirt, deep anger, and revenge, and hate! Tons of raging hate!
The Psycho Pirate watched Sam raise the gun again.
That's it, Flag Boy! Come on! You can do it! You want to feel happy again, don't you? When you kill her, you'll be so happy you could die.
As the pirate watched, through the perspective of Sam's eyes, the back of Starfire's head filled the gun sight.
I don't want to be angry. I want to be happy.
No! I was becoming physical again! I could have stopped Sam!
I screamed at God for taking me away from Earth-X. Why was he being so unfair? But now I was drawn away from that universe, without knowing what had happened.
The blackness suddenly divided into two tunnels, and as if through a telescope's lens, I could see into two different universes. Focused in front of me were two Earths. I saw them slowly coming together. My Earth 1 was merging with Jay Garrick's Earth 2. I found myself first on one Earth, then on the other. For some reason, I was slipping back and forth between Earth 4 and Earth S. Both worlds had dark red skies, and I saw the walls of white antimatter starting to form. It rose up out of the oceans and burned through the waters as it slowly moved toward land. It was, as they say, the beginning of the end. Earth S was the home of the Marvel family. I'd read the JLA files about this planet, but had never been here. This was a world where Captain Marvel, Mary Marvel, Captain Marvel Jr., and several others who fought villains, such as the mad Dr. Savannah, and a sentient evil worm. Yes, an evil worm named Mr. Mind. The Marvel's best friend was a talking tiger named Tawny, and Captain Marvel himself was actually a young boy named Billy Batson. He had to say a magic word in order to become that world's mightiest mortal. Superman told me he met Captain Marvel once. Science had evolved on Earth-S as an adjunct of magic, and the physics and logics of our universe operated differently here. Though they were very different, Superman said Cap's abilities were equal to his own. Mary Marvel and Marvel Jr. were only incrementally less powerful. I heard the fighting before I saw them. Captain Marvel grabbed Supergirl by the cape and hoisted her to eye level.
Good fight, girl, but not good enough.
He shook her, making sure she was unconscious.
I hear you wanted to destroy my world, you and your friends. That doesn't make me happy.
Mary Marvel nodded.
It makes me angry, Captain. Very angry.
Captain Marvel Jr. grinned.
Oh, I'm way past anger. I'm, what's the word? Livid? Furious? No. What I am is happy.
The Psycho Pirate was controlling the Marvel family as he had the Freedom Fighters on Earth-X. Junior leaned in closer to Supergirl, still unconscious in Captain Marvel's tight grip. He smiled, even though he knew she couldn't see him.
You know why I'm happy? It's because I know you're going to die.
Mary Marvel held Changeling and Black Canary by their ankles and dragged them to the captain.
More calls for the fire.
I happened to glance up, and as on Earth-X, Harbinger's image towered over us. Her head was bowed, and her lips were silently moving.
Run through them.
Mary Marvel tightened her grip on the Black Canary.
Such a beautiful face. I wonder what your skull would look like once it's been crushed to dust.
I'm going to pluck out your heart, Green Boy. Nothing would make me happier.
Run through them.
I'd done what Harbinger wanted on Earth-X. I assumed there was a plan, even if I couldn't see it. I couldn't think about what was happening to Supergirl, the Canary, or Changeling. I couldn't think about what might have happened to Starfire. I ran, pushing through Cap's body. He shook for a moment, barely acknowledging me, but I ignored him and kept running. I circled around and did the same to Mary Marvel and Junior.
Now what? What am I supposed to do now, Harbinger?
I appeared in the theater district in the middle of a large city. The street signs were in English, and the license plates on the cars said Illinois. I ran to a corner newsstand and saw a copy of the Hub City Chronicle. I was on Earth 4. I remember just after the Monitor assembled his first army, I overheard Blue Beetle tell Firestorm that unlike Earth 1 and Earth 2, each with a preponderance of heroes and villains, there were only very few of them on his homeworld. I tried to remember their names. One of them was, I think, Captain Atom. His powers were nuclear in nature. Exactly how, I couldn't remember. He mentioned someone named Peacemaker and a woman called Nightshade. There was someone else, too. The Question. Beetle said the Question spooked him somehow. I couldn't wait to meet him. By now, I knew the routine. Harbinger's image, as before, filled the sky. Her head was bowed, and once again, she was muttering something I couldn't hear. She had appeared over the Freedom Fighters on Earth-X and Captain Marvel on Earth-S, so I used her as a beacon. I raced through Hub City, as modern as Metropolis, but darker and definitely more threatening. I saw Captain Atom, it could only have been him, fly past me, an energy trail burning the air behind him. In his right hand, he held a small sphere, no larger than the beat-up old Spaldings I used to waste my time after school hours throwing against my house's stoop when I was 8. the only difference being that the ball he was holding was glowing and expanding. Considering what I had just gone through on the other Earths, I took that to be not a good thing. When the ball grew to baseball size, he threw it at a figure running ahead of him. The ball exploded as it hit the ground, just missing its target. I ran closer and realized he was throwing the explosive at Jay, the Flash of Earth 2.
Hit him high, Azrael!
Near Jay were the Martian Manhunter and Katana, a member of the Outsiders. I didn't know who the others were. Jay called the man with wings Azrael. I assumed he came from Earth 2. I wanted to know more, but there was no time. The Earth 4 heroes fought the Monitor soldiers. Obviously, the Psycho Pirate controlled them as he had the heroes of Earth X and Earth S. I didn't wait for Harbinger's telepathic orders. I knew what I had to do. I ran through the heroes as I had before, though I still didn't understand why. I was intangible. By all accounts, I didn't exist. I could run through people or walls or anything solid without mussing their hair. What good was I doing? I pushed my way through the Beetle and Peacemaker, then turned back and did the same with Nightshade and someone called Thunderbolt. I turned to see a man who literally had no face. This had to be the question. It didn't take a second to streak through him, the final hero on the last of the remaining Earths. I looked up to Harbinger's image, waiting for some kind of explanation, or at least a nice thank you. By now, I should have known better. I waited. Nothing happened. Why was I suddenly thinking Chicken Little? I waited some more. And then, the sky fell. I could see it all happening at once. On Earth X, Starfire unleashed her starbolts, rendering Uncle Sam unconscious. On Earth S, Supergirl's heat vision burned into Captain Marvel. On Earth 4, Jay Garrick drove a wind-tossed tornado into Captain Atom. The tide of battle was turning in the good guy's favor. Then, I was in the antimatter universe again. The Psycho Pirate was on his knees, still held in stasis in the Monitor's machines.
I'll take on all the heroes, your Justice League friends, and turn them against each other in a mindless, jealous rage.
He stopped and looked to the door.
Whatever he asks for, I'll do it. I'll do it happily. And I'll do it any way he wants.
My living self opened his eyes, and I remembered we weren't alone. Because of the merging universes, time was flowing in a loop. I was here, but so were my other dead selves, the me's who had been here before this visit. I couldn't see them as they couldn't see me, but I knew where I stood. I reached out and grabbed their hands, and I began to run in place, increasing my internal vibrations.
Don't forget this! Don't forget this! Don't dare forget this!
Now I was back in the Monitor's Limboverse. Harbinger opened three tunnels, and instead of merging with each other, Earth X, Earth 4, and Earth S slid into them. The final three universes were joining Earths 1 and 2. But the tunnels first led through me, and I finally understood. Many years ago, I had stumbled into the multiverse by accident. It was years ago, and I was at a Central City charity event for children, performing simple speed tricks. I began to vibrate to become invisible, one of my favorite tricks. I vibrated faster and faster, faster than I ever had before. I saw lights, and then suddenly, I disappeared. Not only from their view, which was expected, but from the entire universe, which wasn't. I often wondered what trauma I caused those kids when I didn't return. I had slipped through the vibrations that separated the universes of the multiverse and discovered Earth 2 and Jay Garrick, my inspiration. Later, he duplicated my actions and visited me on Earth 1. But now, Jay was older, still fast, but not fast enough to traverse the multiverse. Wally was a speedster too, but young and not yet at his peak. I was the only man who could move through the multiverse. That was understanding one. Here was understanding two. When the Monitor's machines were activated before they were ready, he let himself die so his own body could become its new source of power. Now, when Harbinger needed to move the final three Earths into the Monitor's universe, she knew she needed far more power than even she had been given. The Monitor analyzed me as he did all the heroes he had brought to him. He understood who I was, understood how I became what I am, but more importantly, he understood how I could be used. The moment those lightning-charged chemicals worked their way through my pores and turned me into the Flash, everything in my body had irrevocably changed. The anti-monitor was the only one who understood what that change meant. I had become a source of power and energy that unleashed itself through the Speed Force. To gain the power she needed, Harbinger had to tap into what I had become. But I was actually even more than that. Those last three universes were already being eaten alive by the same antimatter that destroyed millions of universes before them. To enter the monitor's limbo, the infection had to be removed. I was not only the battery that would save the multiverse, I was the filter through which they had to flow. Yay me. Universes hurtled through Harbinger's tunnels at beyond light speed. Even my eyes could catch only glimpses of the planets if by chance they happened to be angled to reflect the glow of a passing sun. I swear to God, I wished I was blind. All of existence charged directly at me, and that I wasn't its final target provided little comfort. To get past me and into the monitor's limboverse, this star stuff had to go through me. I absorbed the histories of more than 100 billion cultures. I saw endless lives being born, torn apart, and died. Was this how Pariah lived his every day? How did he find the strength to go on? I wanted to scream, to run, or to finally surrender to death, but I wasn't being allowed to. The last of the planets clawed its way out of me, and the five universes were, at least for the moment, safe. I wish I could say the same for me. As the final ember of a last dying sun cleansed itself of its antimatter poisoning by passing through my body, I once again disappeared. Was God at last granting me my long-delayed rest? But I didn't see an end. What was waiting for me was the beginning. The beginning of all creation.
Lila. Whiteness still dominated the monitor's universe, but it was punctuated now by a planetary quintet. Alexander Luther and Lila, having expended all her power bringing the universes here, she was Lila again and not Harbinger, found themselves on a small floating asteroid overlooking a circle of five Earths. Luther couldn't contain his excitement as he stared at the Earths, almost identical in their features, but so different in what made up their souls. He pointed into the distance.
We saved them, Lila. 64 million miles away from us are five versions of the planet Mars, and 300 million miles beyond them are five Jupiters. If we could pull out far enough, we would see five solar systems, five galaxies, and ultimately five universes.
Lila wasn't listening. Her mind was thinking of the monitor and his final wishes. This was the moment for which he had died. But what Lila saw was not his final hope. She silently cursed herself again for killing him, despite knowing that she could have done nothing else, despite understanding that his death was not only anticipated, but necessary. She felt lost, because she knew only he could tell her what needed to be done now.
We've bought time, Alex, not solutions. The anti-monitor moved too quickly, and again, we weren't ready.
But the Earths are safe.
We slowed down the vibrations separating the universes, but they haven't stopped. They're still moving together, and when they finally merge, everything will still be destroyed. I don't know why, but I was expecting more.
But now we have time, and we need to use it to our advantage.
Pariah appeared suddenly beside them.
Alex is right, Lila. For the first time, I see hope.
He pointed to the Earths, a circle of worlds beginning their final revolutions.
There was a reason the Monitor selected these heroes. We need to bring them to us again, and this time, they need to learn the truth.
We've always told them the truth. The universes are dying, and the Anti-Monitor is responsible.
We just saved five universes. We've done everything we can. There is no other truth.
There's always another truth, Alex. The truth about the Anti-Monitor, for one. They don't know that. They also don't know the truth about me. No one ever has. Please, just bring them here. There should be at least one from each Earth. They can tell the others. I want them to know what I did. And I need them to know it's because of me that all their universes are being destroyed.
You!
Alex reached to grab him. The pariah disappeared, and Alex's hands were left clutching empty space. He turned back to Lila.
Is it possible?
Lila shrugged helplessly.
Let's do what he asks.
Can anything exist before existence? I would have bet the farm, the cows, and even Inga, the farmer's daughter, that the answer was no. But based on what I saw, I would have lost it all. Sorry, Bossy. Even sorrier, Inga. What I saw defied logic. In the blackness, I saw a circle of even darker black. It appeared to be calm and unmoving, although it was anything but. Scientists believe most galaxies contained a central black hole, although no photographs had ever been taken of one. I imagined that was what I saw here, a black hole siphoning through it like water down a drain, everything that fell within its event horizon. Everything, including time itself. An event horizon is that space beyond which the black hole's gravity had no effect, but which within it, one would be inexorably drawn to the hole's fatal singularity. Because time passed more slowly at the horizon than beyond it, I saw all time as one, the past, present, and I assume the future. They were, in no particular order, corkscrewing past me, like a falling film strip, each frame a different moment of time, disappearing forever into that dark singularity below. Improbably, the first thing I saw at the dawn of time was a hand. A human-like hand, with four fingers and a thumb. It stretched up through the black hole, pushing past its event horizon. It reached into the blackness of pre-existent space. The hand was open, and in its palm was a cluster of swirling stars, a living nebulae in miniature that began to grow and then suddenly explode. As I stared at this impossibility, I only had one question. Was this the actual hand of God, giving birth to all existence? Under the event horizon's curving arc, I found myself walking on the temporal image of a planet far in advance of my own. I saw cities that seemed to grow out of the planet itself, and the blue-skinned people, tall and reed-thin, were human-like, but not human. Compared with them, our people were only now crawling out of the sea and forming independent thought. The images blurred past me. I watched them for a generation and learned their minds were capable of manipulating reality, bending it to their will. They continually reshaped their planet, which they called Oa, until they were satisfied they were living in paradise. Instants of time disappeared below me, and I tried as best I could to see everything, but not even my eyes were fast enough. Who knows how many months or years or centuries I lost. I watched one of the Owens, a scientist called Krona. He was taller and broader than his blue-skinned brothers, and unlike them, who were satisfied with their perfect existence, there was anger seething just beneath his dark eyes. I watched an argument between scientists. The others were uncomfortable, and I think unaccustomed to disagreements.
Krona, we have to insist that this stop. The council...
The council's full of fools, and you know it. What you're asking me to do is stop thinking. And only because you're frightened of legends.
This is more than legend, Krona, and you know that. Aphraim himself barely opened that door.
And what of that, Toran? Have our lives changed because he dared search for the origin of the universe?
Krona, please. You know when Aphraim reached into that unknown, the Shibboleth galaxy, with more than 1 million worlds, vanished. Now you want to open the door wider?
Krona pushed past him and the others and pointed to the swirling, fully dimensional hologram beginning to form in front of them.
You always were the timid one, Toran. Knowledge should never be forbidden.
Toran reached out to his friend, but Krona swatted his hand aside.
Just look. Look and learn.
The swirling hologram took shape, becoming the same hand of God image I had seen unleash a universe. Krona walked around the hand, studying it, not believing what he was seeing.
It's not possible! A hand? But whose?
The other Owens tried to turn away, but they too found themselves staring at that impossible cosmic hand.
There are stars clustered in its palm. Is this how the universe was born?
The star cluster grew. One of the other Owens lunged for Krona's hologram. He tried to disrupt the image.
Shut it down now, Krona, before...
But it was too late. I fell back and shut my eyes, waiting for the explosion to tear through me. But of course it didn't. I forgot I was still under the black hole's event horizon, watching events that had already happened in my past, but had not yet occurred in reality. The images I saw were so old, I innately knew that primal explosion had not as yet reached what would be our galaxy, or spat out that ball of fire that would, in time, crust itself over into the planet Earth. That would happen a million years from now. I heard a familiar voice. Because of the black hole's mass and gravity, nothing could escape the event horizon. But I knew sound and even light could enter it.
It wasn't the end of the universe as the Owen legends foretold, but the beginning of something new.
It was Harbinger. I didn't know where she was, but I could hear her talking to the others. While I was watching the actual events, still lingering in trapped moments of time, she was explaining to them what had happened when Krona's door opened.
The universe shuddered at that moment, and another was instantly birthed. There were two universes now, one positive matter and the other antimatter. Both were equal in fabric and strength. But then, the positive matter universe shuddered again and began duplicating itself over and over.
I saw the universe become two, then three, replicating until I couldn't count how many universes were forming. I knew what was going to happen next. Violently disgorged, the new universes spun at different rates. Unable to coexist, they slipped into their own time streams, separated from each other by mere moments. But I also knew these new universes, portioned from the original, were also weaker than the whole. The antimatter universe was half as strong as before, but the positive matter universe was fractioned into an infinity of replicates, infinitely weaker. I had just witnessed the birth of the multiverse. Time was passing, but the images flowing past me were still of Oa. I was watching a trial. Krona was the defendant, and his friend Torin his judge. At the same time, I was listening as Harbinger continued to relate Krona's story.
There was now a multiverse with infinitely replicated planets, but throughout all the positive matter universes, there was only one Oa. Its sister planet did exist, but only in Krona's new antimatter universe. It was called Quard, and it was a world as inherently evil as Oa was enlightened.
I knew that when he was Green Lantern, Hal visited Quard dozens of times. I wondered if he ever knew how closely related it was to Oa. Witness after witness described to the court how Krona had deliberately violated Oa's most basic laws. During all the damning testimony, I watched as Krona sat in smug silence.
We all tried to stop him, but he refused to listen to any of us.
I brought him to my library and read to him from the sacred texts of Aphrahim. He laughed in my face.
He said he knew better than we did. He thought we were all fools. I'm afraid nothing we showed him or said could convince him otherwise.
Do you have anything to say in your defense, Krona?
This is all a lie, and you know it. But you've already made your decisions. So go ahead. Kill me and be done with it. But I won't listen to your hypocrisy any longer.
Toran sadly shook his head. He had hoped Krona would admit his error and allow the court to show leniency. But given no alternative, he simply read the jury's verdict.
Your forbidden experiments created a universe which has already unleashed a terrible dark evil. For that, Krona, you need to be punished.
Krona was Toran's closest friend, and the Owens' decision, the first of its kind, was difficult for them all, but more so for him.
Because your crimes could not have been anticipated, there are no laws in our books for dealing with them. We argued for so long, but death was never a choice, Krona. But I fear we might be condemning you to much worse.
Say it, old friend. Get it over with. Nothing you do to me will ultimately matter.
All right. This is the decision. Your atoms will be reduced to disembodied energy. They will, for eternity, drift endlessly through space. I'm sorry, Krona, but your continued rebellion has left us no choice.
I saw Krona give a last smile, as if this was the sentence he hoped to hear. A moment later, his atoms were scattered to the stars. New time-lost images flowed past. I watched the Owens fashion a giant storage battery. In a quiet, solemn ceremony with none of the grandeur one would expect for an event of such magnitude, I saw each of them transfer to it a portion of their own nearly immeasurable power. I turned away from the images, but I still heard Harbinger tell the others what happened next.
The Owens' guilt overwhelmed them. They pledged to become universal guardians and dedicated themselves to stopping the evil Krona unleashed. They created a corps of soldiers, each outfitted with a ring through which the stored power could be focused. They called their soldiers Green Lanterns. But unbeknownst to them, as they assembled the Green Lantern Corps to protect their universe, the antimatter universe gave birth to its own warriors, the Thunderers of Quard. They were armored, powerful, and heartless. And if the Lanterns were created to protect their people, the Thunderer's mission was to destroy.
The moment the Guardian's battery was activated and its power streamed its way through the multiverse, I saw images of two other events set into simultaneous motion. On a fragment of time, I saw a moon of Oa. On it, I witnessed the birth of the Monitor. Next to that image was another. On the planet Quard, the Anti-Monitor was also born. They were, I understood, genetic doppelgangers, brothers born apart. But I also knew, where one was willing to destroy all life for power, the other would willingly sacrifice his own to stop him. They were created fully grown, and I saw the moment they each sensed the other. Simultaneously, they unleashed their power across the dimensions. Their battle began. The Anti-Monitor was stronger than his brother, but not powerful enough to kill him. I watched in horror as he destroyed all but one of the worlds in his own universe and converted their antimatter energy into his shadow warriors. On his first day of life, he murdered a billion worlds to destroy his brother. The images changed. I was no longer watching the past. Instead, I saw momentary glimpses from the present. Shadow demons circled the Earth as the white wall of antimatter swept over the planet. Then I saw me. Don't worry, I'll be right back. Waving goodbye to someone I couldn't see as I rushed ahead toward the wall, to my death. But where was Iris? Why wasn't I being shown Iris? I tried to run closer to the horizon's arc, but I couldn't reach it. I was dead and a ghost, and the black hole's gravity wasn't pulling at me, but it wasn't letting me escape either. Then it hit me.
You're bright, Barry. Bright as a black cloud.
I'd been tossed to the dawn of creation because my body was acting as an antimatter filter. When the three universes passed through me and I was still vibrating at beyond light speed, I was literally thrown through time. As I slowed my vibrations, I was drawn away from the black hole and returned to my own time. I was now on the other side of the event horizon. I was returning to my own century.